I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Welcome. You're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm Dave. That's Tim. Hey, Tim.
Hiya.
We've got two guests lined up for today. Two of our favorite guests returning. We're going to cover two books, Tim, because we have two guests, two books. How about that?
That seems like it makes sense.
Bump in the Night, Ghosts, Spirits, and Alien Encounters, and Secrets of Spirit Communication, their brand new book, Techniques for Tuning In and Making Contact. Rob and Trish McGregor are with us again on the program. Always a pleasure to speak with you guys. Thanks for being back here.
Well, we love your show.
Thank you for inviting us.
Well, you know, 2006. Rob, I think you were within our first five guests when we kicked show off in 2006. If I recall correctly, Tim, it was the legendary episode that only aired in a special form.
Yes. Yeah.
So, We ended up, it was a great episode. We just had to pare it down with some editing issues and had a great interview with you guys regarding your book, The Fog, talking about Bruce Gernon's experience into the Bermuda Triangle and your talk of this electronic fog. And we've had you on numerous times through the years. So as I said, it's always great to catch up with you and Trish about the new books and works you're doing. And, you know, is this a re-release that came out in last year of Bump in the Night? Because I thought I recall this is a bit of an older book, but this rebooted again in August of 2018. Is that right?
Well, it came out in print.
It came out first in digital, and then like it was a year and a half or so before it came out in print. Yeah, that was what happened.
Well, for listeners that may not be familiar with you or your work and have just found the show, Trish, why don't we start with you? What got your interest into the field of the paranormal, spirit communication, and ghosts and aliens in general?
Well, I think I just was born being interested. Honestly, you know, I've been interested since I was a kid. But when I was 16 in boarding school, because my parents lived in Venezuela and there were no high schools, that Americans went to. So I got sent to boarding school. We were sitting around in this woman's room one night after lights out, and I saw what I thought at first was an airplane, a light of an airplane through the window. I said, "Hey, guys, look, what's that airplane doing?" And it wasn't moving. And then all of a sudden, we all rushed to the window, and it just started doing these crazy aerobatic things, and then it zipped away. So I thought, okay, we've just seen our first UFO. So that was the
and this was in front of this was in front of numerous people. So it wasn't something that you were just
right. No, it was a room full of women who weren't supposed to be in somebody's room after lights out.
All right, and when you see something like this, and it was, I mean, how big would you estimate this craft would have been?
That I don't know. I mean, it, you know, I don't even know if I had my glasses. No, I had my glasses on. But, you know, at first it just looked like a light. And then I thought, okay, it's an airplane. I thought maybe it's a helicopter because it was hovering. But then it started doing all these crazy maneuvers, and then it just zipped away. So I have no idea how big.
How, and now, had you had experiences with ghosts or the kind growing up as well?
Yeah, I think with spirits and ghosts I did, although I don't remember anything specific. I'm trying to remember. I grew up in Venezuela, and there were some haunted places in Caracas.
Do they
Do
they approach ghosts and the paranormal different in Venezuela than you see, you know, how we do here in the United States?
Well, I don't know about now, but back then they were certainly very open to anything that was the paranormal.
Oh, they were.
Who knows now, because the country's in such disarray.
Right. Right. And Rob, what about you? What drew your fascination to researching this field?
Again, like Trish, I've always been fascinated in mysteries of the unknown, and it just seemed a natural thing to be interested in ghosts and UFOs I was always surprised that some people weren't interested in it at all. And for me, I also had a UFO experience when I was young. I think I was about 9 years old, actually, at the time, and it was a kind of unusual situation because usually it was winter and it was dark, and I was outside by myself. Nobody else was outside, and usually my parents would call me in as it got dark, but for some reason, my dad decided he would just see how long I would stay out there without being called in. So I was standing out there. It was like we lived on a dead end, so I was standing like at the intersection that led into the dead end, and just looking up, and I saw these lights, red, green, blue, and they were moving around in odd shapes, odd directions, and circling around, and I was just fascinated staring at them. And then finally I went in the house, told my father about it, and he went outside, and they were gone. But then the next day he told me there was he was listening to the radio, and there were people calling in reporting that these colored lights they had seen in the sky. So that was my first UFO experience.
We had a really unusual experience coming back one night from, synchronistically, the town of Jupiter. And we were on I-95, I think it was the interstate, and we noticed some lights around a construction area. There were like, what, six or eight of them, Rob?
Yeah.
Remember when
we weren't on I-95. We were on some other road.
Yeah, it was farther west.
Yeah.
And I said, Rob, those aren't airplanes. Let's get over there and let's get closer. So he turned off, and as we're pulling up to this site, there's another guy on his motorcycle screaming into his cell phone, Babe, the world is going to change. You got to see this. These are UFOs. I mean, he's just yelling at the top of his lungs. So we walked out to where he was, and there were eight lights that formed some type of shape, but they were all moving.
And they're all red, too.
Yeah, and all red. And they definitely were not construction lights.
Yeah, at first I thought when we saw the lights as we were driving through the trees, I thought maybe it was a radio tower or something. But then the scenery opened up, and I could see that it was more lights, and they weren't in a line, and just like a pattern. And so we pulled over and had this experience out there.
And for a while I traded text messages with this guy because we took each other's numbers. And he was convinced that it was some type of UFO formation.
Now, you see something like this. First of all, was there any sound associated with any of this, or perhaps even a lack of sound?
No,
just total silence.
Yeah.
So would even the natural sounds have been somewhat dampened by this?
I don't know. I didn't really notice any sounds at all.
Yeah, I didn't either. Except for the sound of the guy's voice yelling into his phone.
That's pretty remarkable. So, you know, here we are at a precipice of a new day. The government seems to be loosening up a little bit more. There are military talking about the Tic Tac, UFOs that have been seen. Pentagon is investigating new ways to talk about aerial phenomena.
Yeah, we've just seen that unidentified on the History Channel. That was pretty good. That six episodes talking about the government's
that's fascinating.
Navies.
Well, let's start off with your new book, and then we'll kind of launch in, or your older book, and then launch into your newer book, Bump in the Night: Ghosts, Spirits, and Alien Encounters. Do you think that there is a correlation between people that have experiences with ghosts and aliens that we might be, in fact, misinterpreting ghostly encounters to be something else, perhaps aliens that are cloaked?
Well, you know, Whitley Strieber believes that there's a component with alien encounters that involve the dead. Now, I don't know that we can say that all ghosts or all spirits are cloaked aliens, but I think there is a component.
Yeah, but what I find fascinating is there's two sides to that story, that maybe the aliens can move in that dimension where the dead are, and can communicate with them and bring them out as to show the person that they're abducting or whoever, that supposedly make them feel good, because here's your dead mother,
yeah,
brother. But then also there's the possibility that they're inner minds, and they can pull out that image, and they can cloak themselves to appear as a deceased loved one, and therefore trying to calm you down, thinking that you're having a spirit contact. So there's two ways of looking at it. We had one story.
In Aliens in the Backyard.
Right, yeah, where a woman was abducted after a rock concert, and she was taken aboard this craft. And she was a lifelong abductee, and she was so mad that she was abducted again. And so she had these grays were standing around her, and there was the lead singer, Axl Rose. And she said, "What's he doing here?" And they said, "We thought you liked him." And then suddenly he turned into a gray.
That is so bizarre. Well, now, when you hear a story like that, you know, I mean, how do you not just laugh at the person for, you know, sharing that? Because those are so obnoxiously weird.
Well, this woman had some very strange experiences. She had an unexplained pregnancy. And it was in the time when upstate New York didn't have any special clinics for high-risk pregnancies. And so the doctor had sent her to the neighboring state in Vermont. And as she and her roommate were on this road headed towards Lake Champlain, this really heavy fog moved in. And they couldn't see. So they had to pull off the road. They pulled up this driveway into what looked like a converted barn, wasn't it, Rob?
Yeah, and it looked like a converted barn, like a red barn, but it was supposedly converted into a bar restaurant. And they go in there, and there's nobody else in there except two people behind the bar, and they're unusual people. They're only about 5 feet tall, and odd looking. And they asked for something to drink, and they gave them some sweet tasting drink that they didn't know what it was. They drank that, and the next thing they know, they're at the waiting for the ferry, which was like some distance away, right, Trish?
Yeah, across Lake Champlain.
Right, yeah, and they had no idea what happened, how they got from that bar restaurant to the ferry, and so then on their way back.
Well, wait, she makes it to her clinic. She made her appointment. The nurse practitioner did the exam, and she said, "You're not pregnant," and the woman was like, what, kind of freaked out. She said, "Well, my blood work said I was pregnant." I said, "Yeah, your blood work said you're pregnant, but you're not." So her sense was that in that barn or whatever it was,
they had taken the baby.
And on the way back, they past the same area, and they couldn't find the barn.
Yeah, they turned into the same area where the same road, supposedly, and there was no bar there.
And this was outside of Dannemora, the prison for psychiatric, or it used to be.
People.
Yeah.
It's a strange story.
So she was still presenting as pregnant because she still had the hormones of having been pregnant, but she believes she was abducted and the baby was absconded with.
Right.
Exactly, yeah.
Now,
so that,
you know, do your
that
BS
terrifying.
Right? Do your BS meters ever go off when you talk to somebody like this? Not that I'm calling her out, but I mean, how do you differentiate between a legitimate claim and something so wildly fantastic?
Well, most of the time, not all the time, we take people for their word, especially this particular woman, because we got to know her. We had phone conversations.
Yeah, we've got. When you get to know somebody over time and hear their stories, you know, sure, she could be making it up, but, you know, it just didn't seem likely to us that she was telling us this, you know, just making up this fantastic story just to...
It's not like she ever benefited financially from any of this stuff.
For her to tell us these stories, but, you know, but I guess some people might make up these stories. We have another fog one that definitely is a, you know, somebody who has never had any type of experience like this. She was in the Florida Keys. And she
was a 70-year-old grandmother.
70-year-old. And she was driving from Big Pine Key to Isla Mirada, which is 58 miles, and she suddenly came to a thick fog that lasted for about a mile, and then when she got out of the fog, there she was in Isla Mirada, and it had taken her less than 15 minutes to get there, and she just freaked out. She came into the hotel where her husband and son were, and she's just burst into tears. She said, "I just time traveled," and they said, "How did you get here so fast?" Talked to her before she left, and you know, and they became upset as well at this experience. And
And her husband said, "Oh no, do we have to go on Oprah?"
No, that's definitely more of a Maury Povich episode, I think.
Yeah, right. But, you know, she said nothing like this had ever happened to her before. She's not particularly psychic or, you know, nothing. She doesn't experience weird stuff like this.
Yeah. We also heard from a man who had an experience on a golf course at the Biltmore.
In Miami.
Oh, in Miami. This is another fog story. He was meeting a friend who he hadn't seen for a while, and they decided to go for a walk on the at the Biltmore on the golf course. And he had grown up in the area and had been there, walked around there since he was a kid, and just kind of getting back together and, you know, familiar area. So they're on the ninth hole, walking along. And suddenly, Hector stops, and it feels like there's a hand inside his face pressing against his brain, and the back of his head was burning. And at the same moment that he had stopped walking and talking, his friend had stopped talking and walking and said, says, "My eyes are just full of sparkles. I can't see anything." And then it just, both the experiences went away, and they looked up and they saw this bank of fog a couple hundred yards away between two trees. It was about 40 feet wide and about 15 feet high, just like a rectangle. And they looked at it, and suddenly this bank of fog starts moving towards them, and they're watching it, and they start walking backwards watching it, and then they were moving faster than fog, and then the fog stops and starts receding back into the where it was in the trees. And they're wondering, it wasn't a type of evening where there would be fog in Miami, and the fog, it didn't dissipate, it didn't spread out, but it came right towards them. And then it came again towards them a second time. And that's when Hector said, tells his friend, "Listen, do you hear anything? Do you hear any crickets? Do you hear any birds?" And it was just total silence. And then suddenly they hear this screeching sound that sounds like something both electronic and biological from a couple hundred yards away in one direction. They look up, and then they hear it again a little closer in another direction, and then again even closer. And then finally, they hear this screeching sound right at their feet, and so they're pushing around with their toes and their shoes, seeing if there's insects or whatever it is, and then they look up, and the fog is right in front of them. And they can't move, and the fog just envelops them. And it's just like Hector says, it was just like almost being electrocuted. It was just very painful electrical sensations. And his friend screams. He says, "I can't see. I'm blind." And he takes him by the arm, and they walk through. And he says it was like walking through water. The fog was so viscous, so thick, and finally they make it out towards a building, and the fog starts retreating again, and they said, "We got to get out of here." So they work back their way down these steps back to the car, and they sit in the car, what happened to us, and talking about it, and they look up, there's the fog coming down the steps, and he turned on that engine and drove out of there. That was it was like the fog had intelligence. I mean, is this guy making this story up? You know, it's strange.
Well, no, you, of course, have been talking for quite a while regarding electronic fog phenomena. What do you think is going on? Is this some form of intelligence? Is this like a portal, or is it something else?
Well, that's, you know, Bruce, when Bruce talks about the electronic fog, he's thinking of it, and he wants to think of it in terms as an unknown
phenomena,
geo-meteorological phenomena. And I'm looking beyond that. I'm saying there's something behind the fog that he's experiencing. So,
just because it seems sentient
in that particular case, but also in his own experience. He's flying from Andros Island, and he sees this lenticular cloud that is like a shape of a UFO about a mile across. Lenticular clouds usually appear high, like 10,000 feet, usually above mountaintops. And this is about 1,000 feet over the ocean. So he flies around it, and as it flies around, he looks back, and his arms are shooting out on either side of this this lenticular cloud, and out on either side, and he's flying, going, I think, 160 miles an hour, 170 miles an hour, and the fog is, the branches of this cloud are going faster than him. They're catching him, and then there's another one out in front of him that's also shooting out branches, arms, and suddenly he finds himself inside of a donut hole within this cloud. That he tries to, it's huge. It's like 20 miles across, and he goes down to get underneath it because it looks. It goes all the way down to the ocean. So he goes up and tries to climb up, and he realizes that this cloud must be 60,000 feet up, and so he's trapped inside. But then he's with his father and a business partner because they were looking in.
They're also pilots.
Yeah, we're also pilots, and they're looking into building a resort on Andros Island, and he had taken this trip back and forth, so he knew it very well. And he sees the hole, like where the two arms are coming together and it's forming a tunnel. So, and he sees blue sky on the other side. So he flies towards that tunnel, flies into it, and suddenly, when he's into it, all the electronic equipment goes out. The compass is spinning, and there's this circular cloud. The cloud is like making circles around the plane, and then he gets to the other side, and there's no blue sky. It's just kind of this milky yellow haze, and they are able to make contact with the Miami Tower, and they said, "Do we?" Because they diverted from their path, their direction. And the tower says, "There's nobody out there." He said, "We should be near about 10 miles from Bimini." And they said, "No, there's nobody out there at all." And so the father took the Oh, and he was very upset. You know, this new plane had all the latest gear, and they, of course, were out here. You must see it. And then suddenly there's silence, radio silence for a couple of minutes, and then the radio comes back on. He said, okay, I see a plane coming in over Miami Beach. And he said, Bruce says, no, it couldn't possibly be us. We should be 100 miles away from Miami Beach. And he looks down, the fog that's surrounding the plane breaks up. He looks down and he sees Miami Beach. And he has no idea how they had gotten there so fast. So, you know, that's another, you know.
But also, didn't Joe McMoneagle remote view that?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. Some years later, Joe McMoneagle, who was a remote viewer with Stargate.
Yeah, we gave him that to task.
Yeah, we gave him a target and said, okay, what do you see with this? And what Joe saw was that the cloud was a UFO and that Bruce was inside it.
Yeah, he thinks Bruce was abducted in that experience, and Bruce denies that. He doesn't want to be an abductee.
So he just refuses that version of reality.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, the Bermuda Triangle, you know, if you go on the internet and look up Bermuda Triangle, there's website after website after website that just says there is no mystery. There is no mystery. It's weather related. It's could be
urban legend.
There's no mystery. But the statistics show that there's no more disappearing planes and ships in that area than in any other area in the world. And, you know, all that may be true, that some planes and ships do have weather problems and other pilot error, but there's something else there.
Yeah.
I'm sure we had our own Bermuda Triangle experience with Bruce. I mean, he's scary to fly with.
That's for sure.
We were at Andros Island again. This time we were with being interviewed with UFO hunters a number of years ago. And on our way back, as we took off and flew over AUTEC, this Atlantic Undersea Testing and Evaluation Center, a secret Navy base, and suddenly...
And Rob and I are sitting in the back, and Bruce and his, obviously, Bruce and his wife are in the front. So, but we could see the instrument panel.
And the navigation system just went out. We had been watching the Bahama Islands on the screen, and suddenly everything just disappeared. And so, fortunately, Bruce is a good pilot, and he was, you know, able to. I think that he still had a compass working, so he could go.
Well, he also knew that area.
Yeah, and he was able to fly back to the coast. And as soon as he crossed over land, the navigation system came back on. The next day, he had it checked out, and they said there was nothing wrong with it. It was operating perfectly fine.
Meanwhile, I'm in the back seat because I'd had some pilot experience, and I was freaking out. I thought, oh, my God, we're going to die up here.
Well, that's always a comforting feeling when you're flying with somebody and you know what to expect.
So that was kind of a minor experience. I mean, we didn't really have any time and space
details. No.
Or anything, but
just lost contact with everything.
Plus contact with the possibilities of surviving. That's what it seems like.
Yes, exactly.
Real quickly, Pluto TV is the leading free streaming television service, folks. Watch over 100 TV channels and thousands of movies on demand, and you can do it all for free. No credit card needed. You don't have to go through any electronic fog tunnels to get it. Pluto TV is the easy and completely legal way to watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies. What are you waiting for? Never pay for TV again. Download Pluto TV for free on all of your favorite devices today. On your phone, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, smart TVs, PlayStation, anywhere else that you stream video, download Pluto TV right now. Rob and Trish McGregor are guests today as we talk about high strangeness. The book Bump in the Night and Secrets of Spirit Communication Techniques for Tuning In and Making Contact are our conversation today. As we discuss some of these other strange situations that you're referring to, you know, Rob, I'm curious, this that fog that seemed to have intelligence of its own that chased those people down, the electronic fog that Bruce Gernon encountered when in the Bermuda Triangle. A lot of the sensations and the aspects of those stories seem to be something that other people have related to during their paranormal encounters, these sensations of kind of otherworldly energy crackling around them. We've noticed in some locations that are known to be haunted, there are sometimes light burst emissions that have been captured on camera leading up to or directly after paranormal activity. In electronic voice phenomena collecting, at times there's a crackling or popping sound that occurs almost like the transmission is pushing through like a walkie-talkie to be heard. Do you think that there is something more to the fact that we're dealing with parallel or interdimensional contact as opposed to talking to the dead in these senses?
I think anything's possible.
Yeah. We've heard stories where people have apparently made contact with deceased loved ones through the internet. We have one story of...
That's a very strange one. This woman we got to know through blogging. We also met her out in Oregon. And shortly after her husband died, she was texting her daughters. She has two daughters, saying, you know, when can you come out to the house and pick up, you know, help me go through your dad's stuff and blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden, at the top, I guess within the body of the text message, appeared the words, "I love you." And Nancy freaked out. She said, I didn't write that. And her daughter said, "It's Dad. It's got to be Dad." And it seemed to be a genuine...
They were talking about what to do with his clothes and his belongings.
Yeah. It seemed to be a genuine contact scenario. And she said what's interesting is that when her husband was alive, like he would be upstairs and she would be downstairs, and instead of going downstairs, he would text her. So he apparently was a big texter.
I was going to talk about another story, actually, though, a woman named Kira that we also wrote about. She had three sons, and one of them died in a car wreck. And the two surviving sons, adult men, returned home one weekend, and that was rare because they lived in different parts of the country, and they would both be there. And so she went on Facebook and said, typed in, "My boys are here. We're all here now." And she typed that in and sent it. And at that moment, a poem popped up on the screen. She doesn't know how it got there. It was a poem that she had written about her deceased son, about a dream that she had about him. And she was just amazed. She called her sons over and said, "Now we really are all here." So that was
Yeah, I mean, it seems that spirits use whatever is available to communicate, because we've collected some stories that involve just about anything you can think of, from animals to objects to...
Yeah, a lot of spirit contact and synchronicity is one thing we've collected.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, we have to take a break. During the break, check your phones, check your Facebook, check your messages, check your emails, see if spirits have communicated with you. We'll be back. We've got more to discuss right here on Beyond the Darkness. Calling all true crime fans, the Court Junkie Podcast is now on Podcast One. Imagine being wrongfully convicted for a crime you didn't commit, or a killer is still on the loose, even though there's enough evidence for an arrest. The Court Junkie Podcast shines a light on the injustices of the judicial system with deep dives into court documents and interviews with those closest to the case. Download new episodes of Court Junkie Podcast on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Beyond the Darkness.
Welcome back to the program. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. That guy, that's Tim Dennis. Tim, we just had a very surreal near paranormal experience, near death experience. As we're in the break,
And we're all preparing to come back. I suddenly hear some static and shuffling, and then I hear very clearly Trish go, "Oh shit!" And then static, and we lose them.
Yeah.
So we're talking about time tunnels. We're talking about electronic fog, paranormal encounters, alien abduction, and there's nothing more unsettling than hearing your guest go, "Oh shit!"
The aliens came.
Oh, good Lord! Well, I hope it was good for you at least, and welcome back to the show. Thanks for fitting us in between abductions. Rob and Trish McGregor, our guests today. Bump in the Night. We have a link up for that book on today's program and their new book, Secrets of Spirit Communication Techniques for Tuning In and Making Contact. Let's start to dive into that aspect for the remainder of the show, if you don't mind. And I'm sure you'll share some stories of strange contact as we continue on. We set that kind of in the interesting way we ended the last segment, talking about different forms of communication. But are you finding that, as you said, that spirits are kind of opportunists and they will reach out to us any way they can? Are you finding more and unusual ways that spirits are making themselves known here in the 21st century?
Well, that text message story was one of the best we've heard. But one of the ways seems to be through numbers. A number of years ago, we were in Costa Rica, which was a place my parents absolutely fell in love with. And Rob had gone to a yoga class, and my daughter and I walked into a shop to see what they had. So I walked up to the counter, thinking about how my mom would love this shop, and set this everything down, and the bill came to $111.11. That's five ones. And I just stared at it, and the woman said, "Oh, maybe you should play the lotto." And I'm thinking, hey, that's my parents talking to me. I knew it was, you know, just because never in my life have I gotten 111.11. And I was thinking about them, how much they love Costa Rica and how much my mother would love the shop. But I think that's another.
Yeah, but, you know, something like that is pretty subjective about.
Sure it is.
Your own feelings. And a lot of this is. But, you know, there's cases like where a broken radio begins to play.
Well, that's that Robert Shermer. Tell him the Shermer story.
Yeah,
Michael Shermer. Yeah, Michael Shermer from Skeptic Magazine.
Yep.
A story he actually wrote about in his column, and he's a arch skeptic, and you know, he said maybe we have to take a second look at this stuff. He was getting married to a German woman, and she was very happy getting married in the United States, but she missed her family. Father was dead, and she was sad that nobody could from her family could be there. And she had her belongings sent over, and one of the things that was sent over was her father's old radio, broken radio. And Shermer had played with the radio, tried to get it to work, and it never did. So after the ceremony, they walk back to the room, and they hear this love song playing. And it's coming from that radio. And the wife, also a skeptic, just breaks down tearing and crying and says, "That's my father. He's contacting us." And Shermer was pretty upset, you know, startled by it, too. And it played for about an hour and then stopped and then never worked again. So he wrote a column about that.
In Scientific American, no less.
However, 2 years later, he's back to being, you know, he's being the same old skeptic, you know, and saying none of this is real, you know. But it struck him for a second, at least, he was a believer. But now he's dismissing all things spirit contact related.
Well, you know, he's an interesting guy because he'll tell you, you know, I can't tell you what that is. It's weird. It's strange. It's unexplainable. But is it ghosts? I'm not going to go on record and say that. So I give him credit with standing by that, because once you've kind of built a life as a and career as a skeptic,
right,
if you flip, he would be torn apart by so many different sides. So I get where his aspect comes from in the way he has to deal with this. But, you know, at this point, it seems everybody is an empath. Everybody is a medium or opening and awakening to psychic awareness. And, you know, I wonder if this is legitimate, if it's people just wanting it so bad that they're
they're claiming these, you know, abilities that they don't really have, or are we really capable of spirit communication on our own? And how do we start to develop that and enrich that aspect of our humanity?
Well, I think, first of all, I mean, the need is really important. I think that's why Shermer and his wife experienced what they did. She really needed something. And even though they were both skeptics, it came through.
Yeah, I think the first step, really, I mean, for somebody who wants to make contact, is first of all, what's required is recognition, recognizing that contact is possible. Now, in Shermer's case, that was really not there, and yet the contact was made. But
that was desire, I think, too. She was open.
Right. And then another step is awareness, just increasing your awareness of the many ways that spirits can make contact, not just, you know, appearing like a ghost in front of you, like a full form. That's, you know, not that's one way that could happen, but there's many other ways, with like synchronicity, that contact could be made. And then in the book we also talk about intention. Attempt to initiate the contact, making your request and repeating it loud, and so you're making that intention, and then giving it attention, add desire, and visualize the one you want to see, and add a fond memory, and then finally, just no tension, just let it go, forget about it, you're done with it, and see what happens. Yeah.
Well, you know, spirits also communicate through sound, and we had a really unusual experience in 2015. We got to be friends with Whitley Strieber and had heard that Anne had passed away, his wife. And so I was writing him an email saying how sorry I was. And so as soon as I write the words, you know that if there's anything we can do, there was a tremendous explosion in our family room, which is right off our offices. I mean, it totally freaked Rob and I out. The dog leaped off the couch. We thought it sounded like a transformer had blown.
But in our house.
Yeah, inside our house. And so we checked the television. I mean, everything was fine.
Yeah.
And so I wrote...
Nothing had fallen over?
Nothing. So I wrote Whitley, and I said, okay, I said, is this Anne? And he wrote me back, and he goes, it sure as hell is. She's stirring things up on the other side. And it was inexplicable.
That's funny. That's funny that he recognized it as well.
Yeah, he did. Right? In fact, we met him a couple years later in Casa Dega, where everybody talks to the dead. And we talked about that experience. And I asked him, I said, well, why did she do that? He said, just to get your attention.
It worked.
Yeah, it sure did.
It certainly worked.
Yeah, we had a strange experience in meeting Whitley and Peter Lavenda, who is another author who writes about very strange things as well. He's also involved with this To the Stars.
Tom DeLonge.
Tom DeLonge, and is writing about UFOs now as well. And we met them both at this spiritualist community of Casadega in Central Florida. And Lavenda, he's a strange character. He's probably related in some way or another previously or even now with an intelligence.
He won't admit it, though.
But, I said, why don't you get a reading with one of these psychics, one of these mediums, Peter? And he said, if I did that, I'd have to kill her afterwards.
God.
That's comforting. Yeah, maybe not a good plan. Why do you feel that he's really affiliated with one of these alphabet agencies?
Because he has been in too many historical events, supposedly by coincidence. He was in Chile when Allende was ousted.
He speaks Mandarin. He spent time in China. And
he goes to these retired spy conferences.
Yeah, one time I asked him where he, I was emailing him, I asked him where he was, and he said, oh, I'm at a conference of retired intelligence. You know, that kind of gave it away.
All right. Now, in communication, talking to some of the people that you've gotten insight from, and, you know, people that are insiders in intelligence agencies, has anybody ever come forward or kind of tipped their hat to you that they might actually employ aspects of that in their work?
Well, Joe, but that he's retired from.
Yeah, Joe McMoneagle. He was a psychic spy for the Army and the CIA. Joe is unusual. He has no fear, no sense of anybody watching him or anything, and he's unusual person in that way. And he's,
That's an interesting question. I need to think about that.
We'd had one experience where we did a 9-part blog post about a man who lived outside of Montreal, who worked in the aeronautical industry in Montreal, who had a UFO experience, a startling UFO experience one morning at 5 a.m. when he got up to get ready for work. And we put that in. It really affected him emotionally and mentally for a long time. And we put that up in nine parts, and we had so many intelligence agencies coming in to read those blog posts. And one was the Royal Canadian Mounted, spent 8 hours on the blog that one day looking at all of those. And I had this impression of cops on horses chasing. I told that to the man who had the experience. He said, "Oh no, they don't ride horses anymore. They're just like the."
What about spirit communication and alien communication? Is there different methodologies that you've uncovered to, you know, successfully connect with either one of those, or do you find that they're pretty much the same thing?
Yeah, we don't really go looking for alien communication.
Although one night, we had a weird thing. One night we're in Barnes & Noble. I found a new UFO book. I bought it for Rob. We walk outside and see this anomaly that's about, what, 300 feet up, 500 feet?
Just a bright light above us. And we're standing there. We stayed there for quite a while watching this light. We couldn't see a shape of what it was. It was just
hovering. It was soundless.
Right above the parking lot. And people are walking by, and, you know, you're looking up. When somebody looks up, you kind of look up to see what they're looking at. Nobody looked up. That was really strange. And we were just watching it. And Trish said finally she wanted to go over to the nearby Walgreens. And so we drove over there, which is pretty close, just a couple hundred yards in the parking lot. And she went in. And I was sitting there, and that light then moved across the boulevard nearby, Forest Hill Boulevard, and was hovering above the a golf course. And so where I was sitting in the car, I could see it again, which is really strange. It, you know, it seemed to me like it was some kind of contact. But what it was, you know, was it just a drone or something? I don't know, you know. It wasn't making any noise.
What are some of your other favorite or unusual stories of spirit communication that you've uncovered over the years?
God, there's so many. what's that? Let's see. We've got some. Well, here's one. And this happened in the town of Casadega. Our daughter was young enough to still be in a stroller. And Rob and I had gone up there for the weekend, taken Megan with us. And the hotel was deserted because it was bike week, so all the tourists were in Daytona. And we got this room at the top of the stairs. About 11 o'clock, we said, okay, we'll get in bed and read. All of a sudden, we hear this pounding, I mean pounding, of boots on the stairs. And I looked at Rob and I said, well, I thought the hotel was empty.
Then coming down the hallway.
Yeah, and then it came down the hallway. And then it stopped in front of our door, and the knob started rattling. I got so scared, I started this is going to make any difference, right? Started pushing the dresser up against the door and looking for a way to get out with my daughter, like a fire escape.
We aren't really afraid of spirit contact, but whatever this was just...
It was scary.
Whatever was out there, it was the last thing I wanted to do was open that door. I mean, it just was something very negative, and
it was malevolent.
Yeah, malevolent. And then it disappeared, moved away.
And the next day I mentioned it to the clerk at the desk. He goes, oh, all our spirits are friendly. And I said, this one wasn't.
Yeah, another story took place in Dominican Republic, where this was a number of years ago, and it was a windsurfing vacation for my daughter and I, and Trish was along. We got a hotel room right on the beach. We thought, oh, this would be nice. And so we checked into the hotel, and we looked at it online. It looked like there was a courtyard in front, but what that courtyard was actually a graveyard. And our room, the porch, looked right over into the graveyard. And our daughter didn't like that at all. But like on the first or second day, we found the gate open to the graveyard. So we just kind of walked in there. And then a gravedigger came up to us and started talking to us and saying that he was digging a grave when he came upon another graveyard below. Because in this, rather than the sand disappearing out from the sea, in this particular area, it grows higher. And so there was an older cemetery beneath this one. He was fascinated by that, and he wanted us to come and see it. We decided that was okay.
Well, what does Rob do? He picks up a stone.
Pick up a stone. But what I was looking at was right near the gate was a windsurfer had died, and his the top half of his board was his grave marker, and we thought this was all old stuff. This was only 4 months earlier, so that was kind of strange. And then our daughter, she said, I don't want to stay in this room any longer. Let's get out of here. And so we talked to the manager, and he put us in another building on the side that was closer to the beach, actually, and the porch there looked out on the ocean, which was... But actually, the door to get into the place was even closer to the graveyard. And so that night, there was nobody in that building at all. We were the only ones in that building. And we go to bed kind of early, about 10:30, 11 o'clock, and our daughter's in the back. And suddenly we hear this pounding sound like a
wrecking ball.
Wrecking ball hitting the side of the building. Boom, boom, boom. Three times a pause, and three times again. And then three times again, and after the third time, we both sat up. At first I had thought it was part of a dream, and Trish sat up. Did you hear that? We both heard this, and there was just energy in the air, the feeling, and it was good. You know, it was positive, unlike that experience in Casadega. This was very positive, and we felt energized. And then the television came on. We had been watching television, and our daughter missed out on all of this, but... So in the morning, before we were leaving, I took that rock out of my pocket and tossed it in the cemetery.
And again, I asked the clerk, is this place haunted? He goes, oh, yeah, but they're all friendly.
Yeah, and it was a friendly experience. I mean,
yeah.
It was about recognition, you know. It was very positive. Nothing frightening about it at all.
Do you now in the book? I know that you cover not only numerous stories about real life spirit contact, but you provide some techniques and exercises for kind of raising awareness of spirits and finding an effective way to communicate with them. Is there a couple of those tips that you can give to listeners right now so that if they're interested, they can begin that journey?
Yeah, it's kind of what I touched on that. The first step you need to recognize that spirit contact is available, and be aware that there's many ways that spirit can contact you, like maybe numbers like Trissa, or maybe through like a white feather fluttering down in front of you, a bird that appears at a grave site. that has some that bird may be a cardinal that had some particular meaning to the person who had died.
Also, scents, smells.
Yes, that's another one. Like smell of a cigar where there's no cigar, or
perfume
that is familiar. Attempting to initiate the contact yourself, making a request. But oftentimes, I believe that it's actually you're responding to them, that they're trying to contact you, and so you think you're initiating the contact, but the reason you're initiating a contact is they're trying to contact you. And then giving attention, adding desire, and visualize. I got two dogs there. Next to me.
They're just trying to communicate with you.
I know they are.
They see something that we don't see. Visualizing the one you want to see and adding some kind of fond memory, and then just letting it go, you know, no tension, and see what happens. Maybe you do that before bed, and one of the easiest ways is to
communicate. Through dreams.
I mean, I've had a number of contacts with friends who have died through dreams, and usually they're unusual dreams because they seem so real. It seems like you're awake, lucid dreams. And like when my cousin died, I wasn't that particularly close to him for a number of years. I knew he had brain cancer and was ill, but suddenly I dreamed of him, and he was smiling, and he was looking really good, and he says, "What's happening?" And smiled and disappeared. And the next morning, my sister called me and told me that her cousin Johnny had died.
Keep track of your dreams.
Yeah, really. Yeah, certainly. Now, is there, and you know, I know none of us like to beat the drum for the negative side of it, but you know, have you found that there are inherent dangers to opening yourself to these kind of communications as well?
Well, the only time we had anything negative was that time in Casa Dega.
And that was a random thing that wasn't related to any particular loved one. And I think what we're looking at in this book is making contact with deceased loved ones, not just let's go make contact with aliens or random spirits, where there could be more danger and you'd need to have some kind of a psychic protection in such a case.
Right. Well, I think that's always been the worry and concern is how do you know that, you know, you even brought it up earlier, are the aliens using the visage of our loved ones to make their approach more palatable? How do we know that when we're trying to communicate with our dead loved ones, we're truly getting communication with them and not something different, something that's attempting to confuse or trick us?
Right. Yeah. It's like that movie with Jodie Foster, Trisha.
Which one?
You know, the one where she goes out in space, makes contact.
Oh, yeah, you mean through contact, yeah.
And her father appears to her, but she realizes it's not her father, it's an alien being that is contacting her.
Yeah, I mean, I think...
Contact is the name of it, right?
Right. Carl Sagan,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know that there's... I mean, part of it is I think you have to look at yourself and say, what do I want here? What kind of contact do I want? What kind of proof? You know, and just make it clear that you don't want some weird alien who's camouflaged as your loved one. I'm not thinking, you know, I don't know that would always work, but at least if you state your intention, I think that helps.
Yeah, and I think where the negative aspect could come in is, you know, looking into haunted houses where maybe like a spirit that is trapped maybe thinks it's doesn't accept that it's dead that it could be some kind of something there that's a little off. But there, I think there's also another type of very negative thing that is a non-human spirit type contact that could be very vicious. I think those kind of contacts are really rare, but I think they do happen, and that may have been what we had contacted briefly in the Casa Diego Hotel because it was something that we sensed was really negative.
I've been surprised over the years when I start to get complacent about the paranormal and start almost taking it for granted, the weirdness and high strangeness of it all, something will set me back on my heels. And, you know, I just finished filming a TV series, a 10 episode TV series. It'll run on the Travel Channel. And in the first episode we filmed, I had something very dramatic take place that had never happened to me before. And it kind of reaffirms the, you know, pay attention, be aware, be respectful, because you forget just how powerful some of this energy really is.
What happened?
I can't say. I'm not allowed to. You guys know TV show stuff until it airs. And it was our first one filmed, but I don't think it'll be the first one to air. But and there were quite a few instances of different aspects of that throughout this season of filming, was watching things happen and being a part of things that happened that I'd never seen or heard before. As a matter of fact, there were a couple of electronic voice phenomena. I don't even call it EVP, direct voice phenomena. We heard out loud, sometimes in groups of four or five, six of us, that were, to say unsettling and unnerving seems almost like an understatement. And I'm still wrapping my head around what experiences we have and looking at some of these parts of the stories that are told. And you just realize how many layers of history take place at a specific location. And, you know, John Sable, the investigator, talks about paranormal archaeology, you know, where when you go to a location, if you have a desire to contact something there, know the information about that specific time era. If there are layers, you know, it may not be as easy to get that information, but in direct contact with that. And he's had some remarkable electronic voice phenomena communication when addressing ghosts in Tietam and Gettysburg by calling out roster roll calls, and you hear men responding and the sounds of gunshots and cannon fodder. So there, you know, there's certainly a lot of different ways we need to really kind of examine the way spirit communication happens. And I think we can't be complacent to just, this is how it's done. You know, there's always a new way to examine it, a new way to push those boundaries.
Exactly. I think the matrix is very flexible.
Yeah. Right. I was thinking that I was going to mention Gettysburg, the Civil War battlefields, that it seems to be a place that's even after all these years, that it's rife for contact with the other side. With I don't know if these are beings, entities that are trapped here, or they're here and elsewhere at the same time.
Well, there can also be tricksters, I think. You know, spirits that say, oh, okay, let's have some fun.
Well, let's keep in touch too, as the book progresses and you guys are, I know you're always working on the next project. Let us know when the next book comes out. We just discussed Bump in the Night, Ghost Spirits and Alien Encounters, and their new book, The Secrets of Spirit Communication Techniques for Tuning In and Making Contact, Trish and Rob McGregor. We've got links up for both of those books on today's program, so you can check it out. Guys, it's always a pleasure catching up with you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
You too. When is this travel thing supposed to air?
Right now they're saying it could be the end of September, beginning of October, or for sure October. So that's,
let us know.
Yeah. We'll be posting about it and talking about it, but, it's something I'm excited to be a part of, because it did shift a lot of my concepts of, aspects of the paranormal. And I'm interested to see how people respond to the activity and types of things that we captured, because it was stuff I was skeptical of.
That's great though.
Yeah. Fascinating stuff. Thank you both. And, we'll look forward to talking to you again in the future.
And thank you, Dave.
Yeah, thank you. And I'll mention you tomorrow to Josh Gates.
Yes, yes. Please say hi to our buddy Josh Gates for us. I know you're going to be filming with them, and we can't really get into what you're doing with that, Josh, but that will be coming out later this year as well. And when that hits, I'll talk to Josh and make sure we're promoting the hell out of it on this show so that people know about it and can see you working alongside Expedition Unknown Man himself, Josh Gates. All right, kids, remember to check out True Crime Tuesday. We're back this week as we're running down an American predator, the hunt for the most meticulous serial killer of the 21st century with Maureen Callahan. Most people have never heard of Israel Keyes, one of the most ambitious and terrifying serial killers in modern history. The FBI considered his behavior unprecedented and described by a prosecutor as a force of pure evil. Israel Keyes was a predator who struck all over the United States, burying kill kits, cash, and weapons and body disposal tools in remote locations across the country. This is a story you need to tune in to hear for yourself. That's this week on True Crime Tuesday. You can subscribe now. Only $5 a month will get you access to all of our brand new episodes, plus all of our archives going back 2.5 years. You get fantastic episodes examining the strangest and most unusual true crime cases and dumb crime, stupid criminals. For Tim Dennis, I'm Dave Schrader. Go check out darknessradio.com for updates on all of the programs that we're a part of. And make sure you come on out and see us this year as we're going to be out at a few events together. You can find all that information and more at darknessradio.com.
COTA just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your COTA fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with COTA. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.